Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome live from Houston, Texas. Is this not awesome? Right behind me, the sun has just started to go down, and I love how the clouds are still kind of pink over there in the side. Side of the Texas Children's Hospital, where my office actually is, just a block or two away. It's good to have you with us this evening, and we're going to have a great show. I do kind of want to warn you up front that there may be some triggers in this show that may offset some anxiety, because we're going to be talking about tough subjects tonight, but I always like to let you know that up front so there's no shock to your system of, oh my, but just prepare yourself. But there's going to be some good information, and I promise you that we're going to turn the corner and end on hope, and that's what we always like to do. So if you're listening in tonight, call some people and say, hey, if you want to hear a show about a wonderful story of victory over pain and how you overcome trauma in your life, I think this is going to be one you're going to want to lean into and listen. If you want to get involved tonight, 888-627-6008 will be the way to do that. Next week, we have Darlene Clark is going to be on our show. And then May 16th is going to be Pamela Lockridge. Tonight was supposed to be Rebecca Bender. Rebecca had her secretary called me, I think Wednesday or Thursday, and said, oh, by the way, we have her in an airplane at the exact same time that she's supposed to do your show. And we put her off. I believe we rescheduled her for June. So Rebecca Bender will be with us in the month of June agenda that we have. So this is kind of, I had this person on my list anyway to contact, and I'm so glad that she made herself open to be here at short notice this evening. Before we get into the program tonight, I always like to throw out a couple, two or three tidbits of what to do, maybe a couple things to do as we go into a new week. This is a new month. Here we are in May already. Can you believe it? What happened? I got a feeling that they're going to start putting out Christmas decorations here shortly, because it's just going crazy. Time is just going by so fast. But I want to give you a couple things I would like for you to do. Maybe we can call these a few things successful people do every day. But let's just break this down even simpler. Here's a few things that you can do maybe every week to make your week a little better as we start a new month. Think about a few of these. First thing I kind of just want to throw down, and you can write these down, is I want you to this week concentrate on the present. Don't allow whatever's happened to you in your past to interfere with what God has planned for you in your destiny. And I think a lot of times the events that we go through, the hurts and some of the pains that we go through, the experiences that we go through, prepares us for what we're going to be walking through later on in life. And as we walk through, we go, wait, I know how to deal with that. Well, why? Because you dealt with it 10 years before, and you already have the arsenal ready to go. So just kind of concentrate on the present this week. Another one, start your week off with a positive attitude. try to only you can change your life, and no one can do it for you. But I promise you, garbage in will be garbage out. But if you fill your life and your mind with positive things early in the morning and throughout the day, your day is going to be a little brighter than what you thought it was going to be. So try that. Try to prove me wrong on that. But do not start your morning by picking up this and checking who didn't like your last Facebook post. That's not going to give you a good day. Leave this down someplace. Spend some time getting your mind right, your heart right with what you have to go through in that week or in that day. Another one I just want to throw out is ignore the naysayers. Isn't it amazing how many people are out there that are just looking around to be able to knock you down or say something bad about you or to burst your bubble? And maybe even if you're doing something new and exciting and risky, you're stepping out on faith, stepping out in a direction that you never have. I promise them, they will be lined up telling you where you're wrong. Oh, step back. Come on. You don't want to do that. Are you crazy? What are you going to try that for? Nobody's going to want, you're not going to want to write a book. You're not going to do a podcast. You don't want to do this. You don't want to do that. And if you just take a step back and go, wait, this is for me, and ignore the naysayers. And the only one that you want to, that's talking negative you, that you want to address is if it is you talking negative to yourself, and you need to fix that as fast as you can. One more. Never give up on things that you believe in. Howard Schultz may not ring a bell to anybody. Went to 200 different banks and was turned down for a loan to start a little company years ago called Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? I think the author of Harry Potter went to publisher after publisher after publisher being denied. And now she's down as one of the most popular authors in the world. Sold more copies than so many, many other authors out there. And I think that if you have something that's inside of you, if you have something that you really believe in, that you think that has been given to you, even by a higher power, they say, wait, I think I'm made for this. This is my time. Yeah. And don't give up on that. You hang tough with that, and you see that to the very end. And you will eventually see, because there's one more I can really throw out real quick, you'll eventually see what you plant is what you sow. And if you plant hard work, determination, you're going to keep on keeping on. You're going to look at the positive side of life. You're going to spend time making yourself better by speaking to God and praying and doing those things that you know you ought to be doing, then you will reap the benefits of that. There is no doubt about it. Okay, just a thing to start your May off with, okay? That didn't cost you anything. That was all free tonight. We have our guest tonight, and before, if you want to get involved and talk to her and you have a comment, this is a subject we have never addressed on the program for a year and a half. But this 888-627-6008, or you can get on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page and join in with the comments there. I'm looking right now at that over here, and we are live on there, and my son's right there watching. So feel free to do that. While you're on there, go ahead and like and follow us if you want to. While you're there, might as well. Tonight's guest, Dr. Lena G. Clark. Listen, I have a whole page. If I read all the bio, I would just finish the bio and go, okay, thanks for joining us, because we wouldn't have time for the guest. But she is a mother, an entrepreneur, an author, a philanthropist, a mindset coach, and she has her own radio talk show, and she's the host of it. She has worked as a mental health advocate for over 15 years. A perfect guest for what we're looking at and do and what we address every week on here at Breaking the Silence. She is also the CEO of Miracle Mind Global, and we'll find out what that's all about, which is an entity of several other organizations operating under one umbrella. She has a PhD in mental health care, and we both discovered that just because you have a PhD doesn't mean we know how to tell time. But anyway, she has a PhD in mental health care and is an international chaplain ambassador for the UN. Unbelievable. I want to welcome to the program tonight, Dr. Lena Clark. Doctor, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Welcome to the program. Now, where are you located at right now, Doctor?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, so your house out of Atlanta.
Absolutely, yes.
How's things going in Atlanta for you?
Things are going great. Yes, yes. Thank you for asking, and thank you for having me on your awesome show tonight.
Well, it's a thrill, and I appreciate you doing this, especially at short notice. I want to let you know that I have read An Amazing Mind twice. It is a short read, but I've read that twice. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything, and I always like to read the books, but I appreciate your authenticity in that, your openness, your honesty with pain. And yes. I think using that to make the world a better place is a wonderful thing. So before we go very much farther, I want to applaud you for doing that and getting that message out. That is so important. Tell me, before we get into that, tell me about you. What is it that just gets you up every morning, says, hey, I want to make sure I accomplish this before the sun sets tonight? What are you really passionate about right now in life, Lena?
Well, definitely. And thank you for asking that question. You know, I have a heart and I'm very passionate about what I do, you know, and as you mentioned, you read my book, you know, a couple of times. And so, you know, out of losing my husband, of course, to suicide, that has become my calling, which is my ministry, my passion, my purpose, all of the above. And that's what I look forward to every single morning that God wakes me up, is to be able to look forward to helping individuals that are struggling, you know, with their mindset, with their way of thinking, with the pain that they go to sleep at night with and not understanding, you know, how they're going to make it, you know, because people don't understand how the mind works. So I just get joyful just knowing that I can help individuals understand how their mind works and the subconscious mind works. So, you know, again, answering your question, that's what excites me, is knowing that I can get up and help someone. You know, I can't help everyone, but those that want help, because it's a choice.
Do you find that when you help others, you heal a deep wound even more? Yourself?
Yes, yes. That was one of the, again, you know, purpose and reasoning for me writing the book, you know, is to get the message out there, but it was also part of a healing process for myself. And the more I talked about it, the more I was able to get out there and reach people and help others. Yes, it was healing within myself as well.
Because this is, I have counseled, I don't know how many people that was in your very role, and it happened with somebody that they were either married to or a mental health counselor that I was dealing with, her son did the very same thing. Tell me, because I think in your entire life, your professional life, you've been involved in the mental health world. Is that correct?
Well, I wouldn't say the majority of my life. I would say most of my adult life, I would say, in the past, yeah, almost 20 years, you know, I have been. But again, it was birthed after losing my husband and not knowing that was, it was a sacrifice. And we often don't know. But again, that was why it was not an easy thing, you know, losing my husband, because we started the business together and, you know, working with individuals that were struggling with mental health issues throughout the city of Atlanta, but not knowing the entire time that my own husband was struggling with his own demons, you know, and depression and schizophrenia. Man with master's degree and of his caliber. So again, we never know what individuals were going through, especially our loved ones and someone that I was married to. So, you know, that's how I started. And again, I left my job, which was, you know, with the government job, and to support my spouse, and his calling, but never knowing in a million years that it was connected to his sickness because he hid it.
Do you think, before we get into your story specifically, we'll do that right after the first break. I really want to get into that so you have time to share that. But do you think men have a more of a tendency to cover up any type of depression, anxiety, trauma, stress? And because I know I did 35, 37 years. What is it about us men? Where are we wired wrong that causes us to do that? Can you kind of what you've experienced with your husband? Because you said you knew nothing.
Right.
But what is it about men?
Well, from my experience, and that's basically what I talk about because I lived it. And what I saw within my husband, again, I didn't connect the dots until after the fact. Men are created to be the head, the leaders of the family. And so they don't want their wives or spouses or whatever, whoever they're with, to know, okay, I'm struggling. Because again, you know, society has labeled, you know, the stigma with mental health, mental illness, whatever people want to call it, as very difficult to deal with. And so men hold it in. They don't talk. They don't want people to think that they're weak just because they're not able to talk about issues of the mind. And so again, it's more so also connected with the ego, and men are just, they're just created that way. You know, they don't want people to think that they're weak, but it's okay to talk about it just because it has something to do with your way of thinking. The pain, again, in my husband's case, it was generational. It was three generations, his mother and his grandmother. And so as I noticed after he died, I said, the buck stops here because we have two children together. And I didn't want that to continue on to the next generation. So again, and then having a son at the time who was only six, you know, I did not want that to go on because he had to be the man of the house at 6 years old. And so I had a responsibility because God had revealed it to me at that point. But again, my husband would often say, why do you put up with me? Because again, he was hiding it, but he couldn't hide the pain. He was self-medicating. He couldn't continue to hide it any longer. You know, again, as a man.
Do you feel that in your case and his case, was it a generational pass down, or was this just it was? How many generations back had it been an issue?
It was three generations. And I do believe, again, in most cases that it is generation. And what happens is, you know, family members sweep it under the rug because at his home going, his mother, who's deceased now, said, didn't you know? And I said, what do you mean, didn't I know? So I had to do my research. I had to ask questions to find out, what does she mean? Because no one was talking. Even my husband did not tell me, you know. And I was told that I was the last one that he was going to tell because I was his wife, you know. And he was ashamed to let me know. But, you know, a lot of times men think, well, you're going to leave me. They don't know what the outcome is going to be. You're going to think less of me because, you know, I have issues, mental health issues. And it's just like any other part of your body. You know, and that's what people have to understand.
So he was the third generation.
Third generation, correct. Well,
that is textbook material, because it's exactly what the textbook says. The proximate is three generations. So for instance, like when I was abused, I feel that my dad was, and I feel that his dad was, so that I was the third generation. Then when it came to me, I made sure it broke. I said, no way is that going to happen. Yes. And that's tough. That's tough.
Yes.
We're going to take our first break. And then when we come back, I want to just go right into 2008.
Okay.
And what we're going to talk. I would really love to have comments and thoughts. 888-627-6008. Or jump right here. And I'm looking to see, we're already getting comments on the Facebook page. But just join in with the conversation, because this is going to get really personal real fast when we come back after our first commercial break with Dr. Lena Clark. We'll be right back.
All right.
finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the VBS Radio Network. Welcome back from the two of the greatest cities in the country, Houston, Texas here, and Dr. Clark in Atlanta, Georgia. We are talking about her work and her book, An Amazing Mind, but more importantly, what the book is about. Norris and you were married 8 years when this event happened. Is that correct, Doctor?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm not going to pretend to tell your story. I want you to tell. And I think people just need to lean into the computer right now and hear what you have to say. If you would, just share with us.
Yes. Absolutely. I just want to start out by letting people know basically what Miracle Mind Global is about and how it was birthed, which was from losing my husband to suicide. And his last words to me were, "Are you ready to go?" I didn't know what he meant. Didn't know that he meant taking me with him. Because he had told many people that he had planned to kill his wife and himself. But no one told me until after he was gone. So I knew at that point God left me here for a reason. Not just because of the children, but to carry on what he no longer could carry on himself. Because he was the son of a mother that was an apostolic pastor. And so Miracle Mind Global is an entity that provides services, resources, and education about the mind. Different departments are available based on the needs of individuals, families, and corporations. And we know what focus and the ability to concentrate can be very difficult to maintain mentally. But many people want to learn how to improve their way of thinking to transform their lives. We live in a very fast-paced world, and everyday distractions can make focus difficult. But what we do at Miracle Mind Global is that we break down the science, and we include the spiritual perspective to assist you with understand how the mind works, because this is nothing that we can handle intellectually or scientifically, because God is not a scientist. So how the mind functions. Sharpening your mind and focusing on what matters. Whether you're looking to focus on transforming your life, accomplishing your goals in life or business, Miracle Mind Global covers everything you need to know to educate you about understanding your mind and then transforming your life and your world. So it's so important, Dr. Williams, that people understand how their mind works, that it's okay to talk about it. But
did that come out of this event?
Yes.
Okay, so this was not something you and your husband had collaborated on together. This has been birthed from.
It has been birthed, yes.
The trauma. Okay.
Absolutely, okay. Yes. But he wanted people to understand. He couldn't speak it. He wanted people, but he wasn't strong enough to do that. He was tired, yes. If we read any newspaper, turn on the television nowadays, or radio, or listen to your family, friends, and neighbors, I believe you will agree that there is an epidemic in the world, in the land, and it's called mental illness. It is nothing new. In fact, there are classic biblical examples of this for our learning. And you may want to read some of the accounts for yourself, and many are mentioned in the book as well. Mm-hmm. But, when I met my husband, again, we were together a total of 10 years, married 8 of those years. And never had any signs, never saw any signs in my husband of having mental illness. Of course, he had his bad days, like any marriage. but I never connected the dots until later on in his later years. My husband was just 56 when he passed. And a lot of times it does increase as people get older because of the voices that people hear. In his case, he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And my our son was only 2 years old. I found papers. And there were papers inside of a red folder, as bright as a bright red apple. And I was looking for the paperwork for the funeral home to give to the home going. And again, I was like, well, God, why didn't you show me this before? It wasn't meant to be. And that's where the diagnosis, everything was inside of that red folder.
So you didn't know about the diagnosis?
I didn't know about any of that until after he died.
Okay.
And so people often ask, well, didn't you see the signs? Didn't you hear anything? But as a spouse and being committed to supporting my, as a helpmate, I didn't focus on the negative. I focused on the positive and assisting him. And never, you know, again, connected the dots. I never thought in a million years that he had a mental illness, you know, on his bad days. So, I was just there supporting him. We had a business where we assisted individuals throughout the city of Atlanta, took housing, people off the street and housed them that had mental illness. Never connected the dots as to why. He was working full time. I was working full time and just, again, supported him. I wasn't one to nag or ask questions. I was just there to support. But he knew why, because he could connect and he could, you know, understand because of his illness. He knew, but he kept it silent and hidden from me. So, you know, as he got older, I saw, you know, the mood swings. I saw the behavior change, and my husband was self-medicating, and he had, you know, what men call is their man cave. And that's where often my husband would go and he would, you know, self-medicate. And sometimes when I say self-medicate, drinking beer, my husband would often smoke marijuana. And I believe in being transparent because my thing is, how can I help others if I'm not transparent? And a lot of us aren't. So again, but people don't realize that when you are on marijuana, it causes you to be paranoid. And the schizophrenia, on top of that, did not mix.
Yeah, it conflicted.
It was conflicting. Now, he was supposed to be on medication. Those were questions to ask. Well, he didn't want to be on medication because my husband was a workaholic. He was an entrepreneur. He was an inventor. He was an all-around man and could do anything and could fix anything. He was in the Air Force. So, you know, the self-medication keeps you in a state of lockdown. I'm sorry, the prescribed medication. So he didn't want to sleep all day. You know, he wanted to be able to do it, to be mobile, you know, because that's how he was. So again, I didn't find that out until afterwards. So these are some of the things that, you know, I experienced, you know, with my husband before he passed. And I saw him, you know, declining with being able to handle business. I had to take over sometimes with the business papers and with the business that we were running. And he wasn't able to complete certain things that he started. So again, these are some of the things. And in the book, a plethora of resources and information and signs so that people can know what to look for, because we often ignore the signs. And I did that, you know, I did that because, again, we don't think that our spouses or our loved ones, you know, we have a tendency to push it under the rug. And that's what happened with my husband's family.
From the outside looking in, Doctor, would the average person on the street or your friends go, this is a very well-balanced, successful couple from the outside looking in?
Yes, absolutely.
So the whole world was like, hey, if you want a good couple, the Clarks.
Absolutely. You know, people thought we were the perfect family, you know, living in a beautiful home. He was able to accomplish his dreams, had a successful business, driving nice cars, you know, again, dressing nice, going to one of the largest mega churches in the city of Atlanta. And again, that's in the book. And yeah. So that often happens. It happens every day,
Dr. Yes. Williams.
You know, people mask. And they pretend as if there's nothing going on. And that's what we were doing. In the book, there's a photo, and we took that photo a week before my husband committed suicide. And you never would have imagined by looking at that photo that he was struggling.
Well, I think you have a list of not only the biblical, some of the biblical instances, but then you also have a list of some of the more famous people.
Yes.
And Robin Williams, I believe, is one of the top ones on there. It's like, yeah, you would have thought this was the happiest, craziest, most fun, most secure. But now that he's done that, you watch past interviews, you can see the torment. You can see the signs. It's like, why didn't anybody see that? Do you go through that now going, wow, I should have picked up on that. I should have picked up on that.
Yes, I do now. But, you know, other people, even within my family, saw what I didn't see.
Wow.
Yes, but no one said anything. And so even like you just mentioned with Robin Williams, you know, he was hiding by the as being a comedian, being funny. That's what healed him. That made him whole. But on the inside, he was hurting. You know, when he wasn't in front of the camera, he was hurting. So a lot of people hide behind that facade, behind material things, behind homes and cars. But when they get behind closed doors, they're a different person.
Yeah. Do you think sometimes we get too close and look at one shade of the paint instead of step back and look at the entire portrait, and we don't see the whole picture? Because they do mask it over so well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do mask it. But, you know, this is a part, again, of being transparent, and that one thing we have to do, especially the times we're living in, you know, Dr. Williams, you know, we're living in perilous times, you know, the pandemic, which is a shift. We're in the middle of a shift, you know, and God has to sift before the shift. And that's what's happening right now. So the sifting is happening. And so people have to realize, okay, which direction am I going in? Pay close attention. We have a tendency not to pay attention. We have a tendency to watch what everyone else is doing instead of watching what's going on right in your face, within your home, your children, your family, your spouse. And we say, oh, they're fine. We know
like
the signs.
I like that phrase. That's a tweetable. Sifting before the shifting.
Absolutely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think we are in the middle of a perfect storm.
Oh, yes.
Of trauma, of mental health issues because of all the things that are happening. And there's just so many. Maybe those were like that during war, when we were in war in our country, World War One, World War Two, those kind of things. But it seems like everything is just a perfect storm right now for, I don't know how many issues to come out of the mental health world.
Absolutely.
So when this happened to you, in 2008, how did you deal with that, doctor? How did you put that all together?
You know, I often ask myself how. So many people said, wow, you got to be pretty strong to be able to endure and to be able to move on. But I had no choice because the kids were just 5 and 6 at the time. And it was never about me. It was always about my family. It was always about my husband and my children. And how I dealt with it was by having faith in God, not losing sight of that relationship. If I didn't have the relationship with God, I don't think I would be here myself because of the pain. It was very painful to be able to find my husband in the closet after just taking our kids to school. Many things went through my mind. You know, he could have killed him on the way, just taking them to school, because he did every morning. He could have came back and just blown me away because that was part of his plan. But the Holy Spirit kept calling me out that morning to wait for him outside in a vehicle instead of waiting inside that particular morning. And so I knew something wasn't right, but I couldn't put my hands on it because he was taking his time coming downstairs. So, you know, I just basically just stayed in the Word. I stayed on my knees. I did a lot of crying out because, again, you know, I couldn't understand why. Why did that happen? We had everything. You know, we built an empire. So, again, there were unanswered questions, unfinished business. And so I just know without a doubt, if I didn't have the faith, and I know that God kept me here so that I could write this book to help others that are suffering, that suicide is not the way.
Was the larger question and the hardest question to deal with, why is he gone? Or why did he choose to go that way?
The hardest question is, why did he choose to go that way?
Yeah.
But we never know how we're going to go.
Right.
Many people often judge because I said, well, you know, I don't have a heaven or hell to put anyone in, and no one does. And just because he left this world by his own hands, we never know. Is that any worse than someone killing another person? God is the one that judges. You know, we're the ones that put the measure of sin on individuals. So, again, I think things happen. Everything happens for a reason. And it was just a point to where I had to come to realization that I had to be obedient at that point because God had a plan. Losing my husband that way was a sacrifice. I knew I always had a calling in the mental health field, but didn't know the extent of it.
Yeah.
And I was often told because of his illness that had gotten worse, that he would have been a stumbling block for me, that I wouldn't have been able to take it as far as God wanted me to. So again, you know, my question was always, why did he go that way? But, you know, throughout the healing process, I do believe that that's how God intended him to lead.
What's your opinion on the stigma that people place on suicide? What's your feelings about that? Because there is, and it's wrong. But what's your opinion of that?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
Well, you know, again, as I stated, I always said, you know, it's wrong because God is the one that makes that decision. But we never know how God has planned for us to leave. Everyone leaves this earth in a different way. So, you know, again, looking at it from a different perspective as to, again, from a spiritual perspective, that's how I look at it. That many times I said, okay, God, you could have stopped it. You could have allowed the gun to jam. You could have alarmed me. Many things came through my mind. People said, well, didn't you hear the gunshot? No, I did not, because I was outside in the vehicle, in the SUV, in the driveway, waiting. And he waited until I left. I came in three times. The third time, I went back in to call him. My spirit would never allow me to go upstairs. But the third time is when my husband did it, when I went back outside. And when they found him, you know, after I didn't hear him respond the third time, of course, I ran upstairs, and that's when I found him. But there wasn't a drop of blood. There wasn't a drop of blood. And many people thought, oh, wow, you know, when you say suicide, their blood's everywhere. So because of that, I said, God didn't intend for me to find my husband that way. He was just laying there as if he was asleep. I think there may have been maybe a drop, maybe like a nosebleed in one of his nostrils, but I was so nervous, I couldn't even get his pulse. And so when I called 911, you know, and they finally came, they found the rifle. It was a high-powered rifle. They found it. He had muffled it in a pair of jeans. So my husband planned it. He was in the Air Force. He knew what to do.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to take our last commercial break. If you want to have a question or a comment, call 888-627-6008. On the other side of this, Dr. Clark, I want to, because you've told, I think, us tonight where you've got the strength. Mm-hmm. But I want to find out, where did you receive or not receive help and where we could improve on that? Because I got a feeling some people, some institutions that we expect to rally and help sometimes drop the ball when something like this happens. I want to talk about that. Get involved with the conversation, 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back after the slash commercial break with Dr. Park.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back for the last segment of Breaking the Silence. We have author of The Amazing Mind, Dr. Lena Clark from Atlanta, Georgia, with us tonight. So, Dr. Clark, I was just wondering, after this happened in 2008, and you reach out to the people that you think ought to be in your support circle, did you come up short in any areas?
Yes, I did.
What areas? I'm interested.
In many areas. And the main area was, of course, with the church.
That's why I was hoping you'd say that, not because I was hoping the church would come up short, but we can do better, right?
Much better.
So how did they handle it that you thought, wow, I was expecting more?
Well, the reason I say that is because I basically held the church. There's an accountability that we all have to be held for, responsibility. Because when you take on that responsibility as a pastor, whatever your title is, just like parents, there's no perfect person, but you're dealing with the lives of people and the souls of individuals. And I met with five pastors within the city of Atlanta, and that one of them was the church member, the pastor, bishop of the church that we were members of. And of course, and I don't mean to flip here, but we all know that a lot of it is systematic. And I wanted to know, why aren't you talking about this topic within the church? Mm-hmm. But if you were to talk about it, if you were to do an altar call on mental health issues instead of how to get rich, 99.9% of your congregation would come forward. But however, they all gave me the same answer. And their answer was, we're not prepared. And so, again, because money is more important. But as we know now, what we're going through, which again is the shift and God is sifting, pastors are included in that sift. And it's about being transparent. It's time for transformation, because the church is supposed to be a place for the healing, for the hurting. And my husband reached out many times, and I found letters where he had reached out, paid almost $1,000 for an entrepreneur class, but could never get a call returned. And as I mentioned to them, I said, it took you over 2 weeks to return a call to a member who was a diligent tither, a diligent member on your roster. And if a person is thinking about killing themselves, they're not going to wait for you to return the call. They're not going to wait 2 weeks. They're not going to wait 2 hours. So, that's who I held accountable. And again, not, some people may say you can't hold them responsible. But at that point, after my husband passed, I received a call from the bishop. And I said, well, he's gone. You know, it took my husband's death to get the church's attention. However, that bishop is no longer around. He passed as well. And all that is in my book also. So, you know, that's who I reached out to. Since then, I was offered to do mindset classes at the church because the church needs to know. The church is hiding. The church is masking as well. The church has become a corporation, and that's not what God designed it for.
I think we're afraid to be imperfect when we're not expected to be perfect. And I think every time that I stand up in front of my congregation and deliver a message, in my imperfections, I'm pointing the way to the perfect one. And that's the only way, because when I'm my weakest, he's the strongest. So it comes through. And it took me 35 years of ministry to discover that, because I did the game. I did the mask. And it affected me and came in hard. It was going to take me down if I didn't, emotionally and physically and spiritually and everything. Once I became real, it was a different world, a different church, and they respond wonderfully.
That's awesome. Yes. You know, like you mentioned, it is. It's all about masking. And my thing is, if you don't have anyone, a lot of churches don't want to let outsiders in. But if you don't, it's okay to bring someone in to help educate you or the person that's in charge, because everyone doesn't know everything. But people are coming to church with luggage, pain of luggage, and they're leaving with the same luggage. And is that what God wants? I don't think so. And that's what was happening for the years that we were members with my husband. I mean, before we could get out of the parking lot, which took almost 45 minutes, my husband would start self-medicating before we reached our destination. And I'm being transparent. And so, again, can you imagine how many households are doing the same thing because there's no one and they're afraid to reach out because of the stigma? They're afraid
of
being.
So the show at church just kept on playing.
Yes.
But it never did resonate because it wasn't hitting real heartstrings.
No. The buck was being passed. He was reaching out for help. He was going where he thought he was going to get help, but he was tired of the buck being passed, you know, within the church.
Wow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about the issues of, do you think we have an opportunity now with what has our country and our world has gone through the last year and a half? Do you think everybody's on the edge of their seat now going, hey, wait, this mental health thing is real because everybody has it. Nobody can go through this pandemic in some way not being affected mentally and emotionally and anxiety wise. We've all endured something. So everybody that I run into in the hallway at Baylor College of Medicine tomorrow, I know is carrying baggage.
Oh, yeah.
So do you think that the positive out of what the world's going through now would be our awareness and our eyes opening?
Definitely. You know, everyone, it does not discriminate. It doesn't miss a household. It's on different levels. Everyone suffers from something, but it's on a different level. Whether it's anger, whether it's depression, it's still coming from the mind, the mindset. And, you know, even though we have officers who may be listening, those that are in law enforcement, they're suffering. Because of their job, they're not supposed to talk about it. They're supposed to keep it hidden. But they're human. They're not robots. You know, and so, again, to address your comment, that is, it's going to get worse before it gets better because no one is doing anything about it. And I put in my book that I will always be an advocate for mental health. You know, I'm in the process of writing a part two, you know, about mental health, wanting to put it on short stories or get it out there, you know, in the media, TV, or whatever. We need to have more stories about this. We need to have more movies about this because this is real. When we say reality shows, this is reality.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we really, you know, often people say, well, you lived this and never knew in a million years. So again, you know, we don't want to talk about it because it's the mind. And what do people say normally when you say, oh, I'm not doing well? And the first thing people say, well, you're crazy. No, if that's the case, we're all crazy. Yeah. And that's the stigma that has been put out there. But it's okay, because when you have pain that's going on in your mind, Dr. Williams, you can't take a Tylenol or an aspirin and expect it to go away, because it doesn't work that way.
No.
It's a process.
And so you disassociate, mm-hmm. or it just starts wearing down. It just starts breaking away everything that you are as a human being.
Right.
If there's somebody, because we're down to just a couple minutes. If mm-hmm. there's somebody listening, because I really believe there are, with the comments and the texts I've got, and this is good. I'm looking at Forrest's question right now, because this is exactly the question I was going to ask. Do you have any advice for families to prevent further tragedies like this? So if somebody has this going on in their household right now and they're seeing some signs, mm-hmm. what advice do you have of how to help?
Well, if they are noticing signs, my advice is to pay attention and to be more compassionate, because they're looking for someone to understand a lot of, and it depends on, again, if it's a male or female, because a lot of men don't want to talk about it. They'll isolate themselves. But, you know, it depends on the severity of the situation as well. We have to assess the situation. But in most cases, most people just want to be understood. They just want someone to talk to.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to do. It's not about you. It's about the other person. And we have to have more compassion. We have to show more love. We have to stop what we're doing sometimes and say, okay, what's on your mind? How can I help you? And it has to be consistent. It can't be just one day and then you miss 2 or 3 days. It has to be consistent with that person.
Non-judgmental,
yes.
Unconditional, right?
Unconditional, non-judgmental, just listening, just being their support, hugging, loving on a person. Because again, it depends on the situation. Some people have gone through trauma. There's a lot that I had to share. My husband was traumatized as a child. Men handle trauma different.
Yeah.
You know, and rejection. He was rejected by his mother, who was an apostolic pastor. So the attention was displayed to the members and not to her own son. And so he couldn't handle that. You know, he was put in the closet when he didn't come home from school with straight A's because he was very smart. So again, he was dealing with childhood trauma but never talked about it. So that's one of the things we have to do, is learn to listen. He often said to me, why do you put up with me? Because he knew I was compassionate. And that's what we have to learn to do. So I would suggest that they be compassionate, understanding.
You know, I have, I talk to people around the world, and they call me and I'm a stranger and they'll tell me stories, mm-hmm. Because they have nobody that's unconditional. Curtis is just now coming online. Curtis, come on. If you have a question, come on in. Welcome, son.
How are we doing, Pop?
Good. What question or comment do you have?
We have a last minute question. It is, what would you say to prevent this from happening to future families?
Could you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
The question was, I'm sorry about that. What would you say to prevent this from happening to future families? Like, what advice would you have for future families?
Prevention.
As I mentioned, communication is the key. Consistency, compassion. Love, and communicating is very important. And we have to learn to talk. Utilize this time, going through the pandemic, of being with one another, is to educate each other, find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people don't talk. But the more you're around a person, eventually they're going to reveal and talk about what's on their mind. But you have to be unconditional with it. You have to be consistent. Even if it's 10 minutes a day. Just like you sit down and eat or you exercise, put that in your schedule to spend time with your loved ones to find out what's on their mind, because yeah. they have to have someone to talk to. That's why people go outside of the home. That's why our children turn to games and situations that they don't need to be in, because no one is spending the time with them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Clark, I tell you, we're out of time. I appreciate this so much. I do want to talk to you sometime next week. I'd like to collaborate with you on a couple of things later on and see if we can work together on some things. If people want to get in touch with you just real quickly, we're down about 15, 20 seconds. How's the best way to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They can visit my website, which is www.lenagclark.com. They can also go to my email, miraclemindglobal@gmail.com, if they want to send an email. And they can also find me on Psychology Today. I don't know if you're familiar with Psychology Today magazine. So if you go there, just type in my name, you know, I'll pop up. And then there's also a contact number there as well.
Yes. Well, thank you for being with us tonight. Appreciate your short notice of being here and just talking about it and being so authentic and genuine with us. Thank you so much. God bless. And we'll be in touch again real quickly. Thank you, Dr. Clark. Appreciate it. As we close every show, I always like to say, no matter what's going on, no matter what you're involved with, no matter what you're going to go into coming week, there's always, always, always hope. Never give up on hope. Join us right here for another edition next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, for Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. God bless you. Have a great week.
Good night.
Thank you, Dr. Clark.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.